and explained quickly the trick that Valentine had played on Elias. "The mortal cup," he finished, "lets him control Agrimmon. Apparently it gives you some power over demons. Not like the sword does, though." "Now I'm even less inclined to let you go," Luke said. "It's a greater demon, Jace. It would take the city's worth of Shadowhunters to deal with it." "I know it's a greater demon, but its weapon is fear. If Clary can put the fearless rune on me, I can take it down, or at least try." "No," Clary protested. "I don't want your safety dependent on my stupid rune. What if it doesn't work?" "It worked before," Jace said as they turned off the bridge and headed back into Brooklyn. They were rolling down narrow Van Brunt Street, between high brick factories whose boarded-up windows and padlocked doors betrayed no hint of what lay inside. In the distance, the waterfront glimmered between buildings. "What if I mess it up this time?" Jace turned his head toward her, and for a moment their eyes met. His were the gold of distant sunlight.
"You won't," he said.
"Are you sure this is the address?"
asked Luke, bringing the truck to a slow stop.
"Magnus isn't here."
Clary glanced around. They had drawn up in front of a large factory, which looked as if it had been destroyed by a terrible fire. The hollow brick and plaster walls still stood, but metal struts poked through them, bent and pitted with burns. In the distance, Clary could see the financial district of Lower Manhattan and the black hump of Governor's Island farther out to sea. "He'll come," she said. "If he told Alec he was coming, he'll do it." They got out of the truck. Though the factory stood on a street lined with similar buildings, it was quiet, even for a Sunday. There was no one else around and none of the sounds of commerce, trucks backing up, men shouting, that Clary associated with warehouse districts. Instead, there was silence, a cool breeze off the river, and the cries of seabirds. Clary drew her hood up, zipped her jacket, and shivered. Luke slammed the truck door shut and zipped his flannel jacket closed. Silently, he offered Clary a pair of his thick woolly gloves. She slid them on and wiggled her fingers. They were so big for her that it was like wearing paws. She glanced around.
"Wait, where's Jace?"
Luke pointed. Jace was kneeling down by the waterline, a dark figure whose bright hair was the only spot of color against the blue-gray sky and brown river.
"You think he wants privacy?" she asked.
"In this situation, privacy is a luxury none of us can afford. Come on."
Luke strode off down the driveway, and Clary followed him. The factory itself backed up right onto the waterline, but there was a wide, gravelly beach next to it. Shallow waves lapped at the weed-choked rocks. Logs had been placed in a rough square around a black pit where a fire had once burned. There were rusty cans and bottles strewn everywhere. Jace was standing by the edge of the water, his jacket off. As Clary watched, he threw something small and white toward the water. It hit with a splash and vanished.
"What are you doing?" she said.
Jace turned to face them, the wind whipping his fair hair across his face.
"Sending a message."
Over his shoulder, Clary thought she saw a shimmering tendril, like a living piece of seaweed, emerge from the gray river water, a bit of white caught in its grip. A moment later, it vanished, and she was left blinking.
"A message to who?"
Jace scowled.
"No one."
He turned away from the water and stalked across the pebbled beach to where he'd spread his jacket out. There were three long blades laid out on it. As he turned, Clary saw the sharpened metal discs threaded through his belt. Jace stroked his fingers along the blades. They were flat and gray-white, waiting to be named.
"I didn't have a chance to get to the armory, so these are the weapons we have. I thought we might as well get as ready as we can before Magnus gets here."
He lifted the first blade.
"A Brariel."
The Seraph knife shimmered and changed color as he named it. He held it out to Luke.
"I'm all right," Luke said, and drew his jacket aside to show the Kinjal thrust through his belt.
Jace handed a Brariel to Clary, who took the weapon silently. It was warm in her hand, as if a secret life vibrated inside it.
"Kamael," Jace said to the next blade, making it shudder and glow.
"Talantes," he said to the third.
"Do you ever use Raziel's name?" Clary asked as Jace slid the blades into his belt and shrugged his jacket back on, getting to his feet.
"Never," Luke said. "That's not done."
His gaze scanned the road behind Clary, looking for Magnus. She could sense his anxiety, but before she could say anything else, her phone buzzed. She flipped it open and handed it wordlessly to Jace. He read the text message, his eyebrows lifting.
It looks like the Inquisitor gave Valentine until sunset to decide whether he wants me or the mortal instruments more, he said. She and Maris have been fighting for hours, so she hasn't noticed I'm gone yet.
He handed Clary back her phone. Their fingers brushed and Clary jerked her hand back despite the thick woolly glove that covered her skin. She saw a shadow pass over his features, but he said nothing to her. Instead, he turned to Luke and demanded with surprising abruptness,
"Did the Inquisitor's son die? Is that why she's like this?"
Luke sighed and thrust his hands into the pockets of his coat.
"How did you figure that out?"
"The way she reacts when someone says his name. It's the only time I've ever seen her show any human feelings."
Luke expelled a breath. He had pushed his glasses up and his eyes were squinted against the harsh wind off the river.
"The Inquisitor is the way she is for many reasons. Stephen is only one of them."
"It's weird," Jace said. "She doesn't seem like someone who even likes kids."
"Not other people's," said Luke. "It was different with her own. Stephen was her golden boy. In fact, he was everyone's. Everyone who knew him. He was one of those people who was good at everything. Unfailingly nice without being boring. Handsome without everyone hating him. Well, maybe we hated him a little."
"He went to school with you?" Clary said. "And my mother, and Valentine? Is that how you knew him?"
"The Herondales were in charge of running the London Institute, and Stephen went to school there. I saw him more after we all graduated, when he moved back to Alicante. And there was a time when I saw him very often indeed."
Luke's eyes had gone distant, the same blue-gray as the river.
"After he was married."
"So he was in the Circle?" Clary asked.
"Not then," Luke said. "He joined the Circle after after what happened to me. Valentine needed a new second-in-command, and he wanted Stephen. Imogen, who was utterly loyal to the Clave, was hysterical. She begged Stephen to reconsider, but he cut her off. Wouldn't speak to her or his father. He was absolutely enthralled to Valentine. Went everywhere trailing after him like a shadow."
Luke paused.
"The thing is, Valentine didn't think Stephen's wife was suitable for him. Not for someone who was going to be second-in-command of the Circle. She had undesirable family connections."
The pain in Luke's voice surprised Clary. Had he cared that much about these people?
"Valentine forced Stephen to divorce Amatis and remarry. His second wife was a very young girl, only 18 years old, named Celine. She too was utterly under Valentine's influence, did everything he told her to, no matter how bizarre. Then Stephen was killed in a Circle raid on a vampire nest. Celine killed herself when she found out. She was 8 months pregnant at the time. And Stephen's father died too, of heartbreak. So that was Imogen's whole family, all gone. They couldn't even bury her daughter-in-law and grandchild's ashes in the Bone City because Celine was a suicide. She was buried at a crossroads outside Alicante. Imogen survived, but she turned to ice. When the Inquisitor was killed in the uprising, Imogen was offered his job. She returned from London to Idris, but never, as far as I heard, spoke about Stephen again. But it does explain why she hates Valentine as much as she does."
"Because my father poisons everything he touches," Jace said bitterly.
"Because your father, for all his sins, still has a son, and she doesn't. And because she blames him for Stephen's death."
"And she's right," Jace said. "It was his fault."
"Not entirely," said Luke. "He offered Stephen a choice, and Stephen chose. Whatever else his faults were, Valentine never blackmailed or threatened anyone into joining the Circle. He wanted only willing followers. The responsibility for Stephen's choices rests with him."
"Free will," said Clary.
"There's nothing free about it," said Jace. "Valentine offered you a choice, didn't he?" Luke said. "When you went to see him. He wanted you to stay, didn't he? Stay and join up with him."
"Yes."
Jace looked out across the water toward Governor's Island.
"He did."
Clary could see the river reflected in his eyes. They looked steely, as if the gray water had drowned all their gold.
"And you said no," said Luke.
Jace glared.
I wish people would stop guessing that. It's making me feel predictable.
Luke turned away as if to hide a smile and paused.
Someone's coming.
Someone was indeed coming. Someone very tall with black hair that blew in the wind.
Magnus, Clary said. But he looks different.
As he drew closer, she saw that his hair, normally spiked up and glittered like a disco ball, hung cleanly past his ears like a sheet of black silk. The rainbow leather pants had been replaced by a neat, old-fashioned dark suit and a black frock coat with glimmering silver buttons. His cat's eyes glowed amber and green.
You look surprised to see me, he said.
Jace glanced at his watch.
We did wonder if you were coming.
I said I would come, so I came. I just needed time to prepare.
This isn't some hat trick, Shadowhunter. This is going to take some serious magic.
He turned to Luke.
How's the arm? Fine, thank you.
Luke was always polite.
That's your truck parked up by the factory, isn't it?
Magnus pointed.
It's awfully butch for a bookseller. Oh, I don't know, said Luke. All that lugging around heavy book boxes, climbing stacks, hardcore alphabetizing.
Magnus laughed.
Can you unlock the truck for me? I mean, I could do it myself.
He wiggled his fingers.
But that seems rude. Sure.
Luke shrugged and they headed back toward the factory. When Clary made as if to follow them, though, Jace caught her arm.
Wait. I want to talk to you for a second.
Clary watched as Magnus and Luke headed for the truck. They made an odd pair, the tall warlock in a long black coat and the shorter, stockier man in jeans and flannel, but they were both downworlders, both trapped in the same space between the mundane and the supernatural worlds.
Clary, Jace said. Earth to Clary, where are you?
She looked back at him. The sun was setting off the water now, behind him, leaving his face in shadow and turning his hair to a halo of gold.
Sorry.
It's all right.
He touched her face gently with the back of his hand.
You disappear so completely into your head sometimes, he said. I wish I could follow you.
You do, she wanted to say. You live in my head all the time.
Instead, she said,
What did you want to tell me?
He dropped his hand.
I want you to put the fearless rune on me, before Luke gets back.
Why before he gets back?
Because he's going to say it's a bad idea, but it's the only chance of defeating Agrimmon. Luke hasn't encountered it. He doesn't know what it's like. But I do.
She searched his face.
What was it like?
His eyes were unreadable.
You see what you fear the most in the world.
I don't even know what that is.
Trust me, you don't want to.
He glanced down.
Do you have your stele?
Yeah, I have it.
She pulled the woolly glove off her right hand and fished for the stele. Her hand was shaking a little as she drew it out.
Where do you want the mark?
The closer it is to the heart, the more effective.
He turned his back on her hand and drew off his jacket, dropping it on the ground. He shrugged his t-shirt up, baring his back.
On the shoulder blade would be good.
Clary placed a hand on his shoulder to steady herself. His skin there was a paler gold than the skin of his hands and face, and smooth where it was not scarred. She traced the tip of the stele along the blade of his shoulder and felt him wince, his muscles tightening.
Don't press so hard.
Sorry.
She eased up, letting the rune flow from her mind, down through her arm into the stele. The black line it left behind looked like charring, a line of ash.
There. You're finished.
He turned around, shrugging his shirt back on.
Thanks.
The sun was burning down beyond the horizon now, flooding the sky with blood and roses, turning the edge of the river to liquid gold, softening the ugliness of the urban waste all around them.
What about you?
What about me what?
He took a step closer.
Push your sleeves up. I'll mark you.
Oh, right.
She did as he asked, pushing up her sleeves, holding her bare arms out to him. The sting of the stele on her skin was like the light touch of a needle's tip, scraping without puncturing. She watched the black lines appear with a sort of fascination. The mark she'd gotten in her dream was still visible, faded only a little around the edges.
And the Lord said unto him, Therefore whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold.
and the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him.
Clary turned around, pulling her sleeves down. Magnus stood watching them, his black coat seeming to float around him in the wind off the river. A small smile played around his mouth.
"You can quote the Bible?" asked Jace, bending to retrieve his jacket.
"I was born in a deeply religious century, my boy," said Magnus.
"I always thought Cain's might have been the first recorded mark. It certainly protected him."
"But he was hardly one of the angels," said Clary. "Didn't he kill his brother?"
"Aren't we planning to kill our father?" said Jace.
"That's different," said Clary, but didn't get a chance to elaborate on how it was different, because at that moment, Luke's truck pulled up onto the beach, spraying gravel from its tires. Luke leaned out the window.
"Okay," he said to Magnus. "Here we go. Get in."
"Are we going to drive to the boat?" Clary said, bewildered. "I thought..."
"What boat?" Magnus cackled, as he swung himself up into the cab next to Luke. He jerked a thumb behind him. "You two, get into the back."
Jace climbed up into the back of the truck and leaned down to help Clary up after him. As she settled herself against the spare tire, she saw that a black pentagram inside a circle had been painted onto the metal floor of the truck bed. The arms of the pentagram were decorated with wildly curlicuing symbols. They weren't quite the runes she was familiar with. There was something about looking at them that was like trying to understand a person speaking a language that was close to, but not quite, English. Luke leaned out the window and looked back at them.
"You know I don't like this," he said, the wind muffling his voice. "Clary, you're going to stay in the truck with Magnus. Jace and I will go up onto the ship, you understand?"
Clary nodded and huddled into a corner of the truck bed. Jace sat beside her, bracing his feet.
"This is going to be interesting."
"What?" Clary began, but the truck started up again, tires roaring against gravel, drowning her words. It lurched forward into the shallow water at the edge of the river. Clary was flung against the cab's back window as the truck moved forward into the river.
Was Luke planning to drown them all?
She twisted around and saw that the cab was full of dizzying blue columns of light, snaking and twisting. The truck seemed to bump over something bulky, as if it had driven over a log. Then they were moving smoothly forward, almost gliding. Clary hauled herself to her knees and looked over the side of the truck, already fairly sure what she would see. They were moving, no, driving, atop the dark water, the bottom of the truck's tires just brushing the river's surface, spreading tiny ripples outward along with the occasional shower of Magnus-created blue sparks. Everything was suddenly very quiet, except for the faint roar of the motor and the call of the seabirds overhead. Clary stared across the truck bed at Jace, who was grinning.
"Now this is really going to impress Valentine."
"I don't know," Clary said.
"Other crack teams get bat boomerangs and wall-crawling powers. We get the aqua truck."
"If you don't like it, Nephilim," came Magnus's voice, faintly, from the truck cab, "you're welcome to see if you can walk on the water."
"I think we should go in," said Isabel, her ear pressed to the library door. She beckoned for Alec to come closer. "Can you hear anything?" Alec leaned in beside his sister, careful not to drop the phone he was holding. Magnus said he'd call if he had news or if anything happened. So far, he hadn't.
"No."
"Exactly. They've stopped yelling at each other." Isabel's dark eyes gleamed. "They're waiting for Valentine now." Alec moved away from the door and strode partway down the hall to the nearest window. The sky outside was the color of charcoal half sunk into ruby ashes.
"It's sunset."
Isabel reached for the door handle.
"Let's go."
"Isabel, wait."
"I don't want her to be able to lie to us about what Valentine says," Isabel said, "or what happens. Besides, I want to see him. Jace's father, don't you?"
Alec moved back to the library door.
"Yes, but this isn't a good idea because..."
Isabel pushed down on the handle of the library door. It swung wide open. With a half-amused glance over her shoulder at him, she ducked inside. Swearing under his breath, Alec followed her. His mother and the Inquisitor stood at opposite ends of the huge desk, like boxers facing each other across a ring. Mayris's cheeks were bright red, her hair straggling around her face. Isabel shot Alec a look, as if to say,
Maybe we shouldn't have come in here. Mom looks mad.